Good evening, Coben. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for inviting me over, Joshua.
It's only a pleasure, man. So, I mean, it's something that we've been paying a lot of attention to, and we've had our fair share of scandals. I mean, going back all the way to the arms deal, which I think was the first, was basically the first post-democratic scandal of such a nature, all the way through to Nkandla, all the way through to Gupta Gate, or the Gupta leaks and everything linked to that as well, and so forth and so on. And unfortunately, what it has ended up doing is that, corruption is one of those things that we talk a lot about in South Africa. And it seems that there's a great sense of a feeling among South Africans that we're more corrupt now than what we were previously.
Absolutely. And what worsens the situation, actually, is that the corruption we have in the country. There is corruption in other countries, as you will see, we are only number 64 out of 176 countries.
Mm.
But ours is more informed by very, very prominent people, particularly in the political arena. It's what informs the perceptions of these people who then go to Transparency International to say that South Africa is becoming more corrupt than it was in 1994.
And I don't know, would you be able to help us maybe with that perception as well of more corrupt now than what we were then? I mean, is there merit in that particular argument? And I mean, it's something that we hear all too often. You have two schools of thought where a lot of people would say to you pre-1994, this was not a problem. And we had all kinds of weird and wonderful things happening in South Africa and corruption was not a concern. All the way through to people saying that, trying to defend current corruption by saying that corruption back then was unpunished, unreported, and unfettered. I mean, is there any insight that you can give us into what was the situation then versus now?
Personally, Kashwal, I have no doubt in my mind that there was corruption pre-1994. But the only way to track that kind of corruption. Because as you can see with the Transparency International, that they started measuring countries in 1994, and at that point there were only 41 countries to include in their index.
Yeah,
and that has grown. So there was no way actually that they could do this international. Because remember, South Africa pre 1994 was not part of the international community. You know, we were a pariah state, and all those sort of things, and we couldn't be added to many indices, including those of the World Economic Forum and so on. So while there may have been corruption in the past, it's not documented as much as it is after 1994 because of organizations such as Transparency International.
And I mean, what I'd like to understand from your side as well is that, I mean, that particular perception, I saw that it's key, part of your explanation for why there's been a decline, because in 1994, there were only 45 countries or something to that effect that were part of this particular list, of countries. And now we're sitting at 176 countries. Why would it then worsen our rating? With a further inclusion of other countries, because my assumption would be that then you go into countries where there is no sense of governance whatsoever, and it's corruption leads the way, and we know that those unfortunately do exist in the world, all the way through to countries that have the highest standards when it comes to their corporate governance or any form of governance for that matter, in ensuring there's minimal. Impact when it felt by corruption. So why is it that the inclusion of more countries would have had an impact on the slipping and where we find ourselves right now?
Well, there is an objective way to measure countries across the world, Kashwal. Mm. And that's using this score of between 0 and 10, where 10 means highly clean and 0 means highly corrupt. So
yeah.
All countries are measured on the same basis, on the same objective score. So if you are 10, like countries like Norway and Denmark and so on, that means the country is highly clean, using the same objective criteria. And then South Africa, what we measured was the decline, not so much the inclusion of other countries, mm-hmm. Because you might have added countries with a higher score. That would have meant South Africa has not necessarily worsened because of the inclusion of more countries. But what we measure objectively is the score from 5.8 to the current 4.5. And in fact, at some point in 2011, when all these stories were coming out of corruption and so on, the score fell to a low of 4.1. And the subsequent increase to the current 4.5 might have been helped by issues such as Tulima Donsela being seen to take action against such incidences. So we use the score, and the score has definitely gone down, whether or not there are more countries or not.
The other issue that I wanted to look at with you is that, I mean, is there also, have the numbers gone up as a result of the fact that there's greater reporting, whether it be through the media, whether it be through private citizens who come across corruption, I don't know, at their local school or corruption in their local community, and then they take it further and they say that, okay, listen, guys, we're not happy with the situation and therefore you need to do something about this? Or is it, really largely because we're just becoming more and more corrupt? I mean, you know, it could be either one of those two possibilities there, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as I said, while corruption in other countries might be largely hidden by the fact that it's committed by, less prominent people than in South Africa. In South Africa, such issues, we became aware of such issues largely because they were committed by the highest people in high positions. It was government people for the arms deal, and also the president himself, head of the country, who was supposed to be an example to all citizens of the country, who was involved in this kind of thing that might have largely informed the perceptions of the analysts who were involved.
I mean, it is quite damning because, I mean, obviously, Cohen, as you would realize, that then has an impact. I mentioned it just before, I introduced you that, we might have dodged a bullet with, the downgrade from Moody's and the various rating agencies.
Yes.
We might have, there seems to be an upturn in the economic environment in South Africa. But the fact of the matter is that when a country has a perceived high level of corruption, people are reticent and people are scared of investing in that particular country because it means that I have to bribe my way through. Efficiency doesn't count, and it means that the highest bidder, to people with power, are the ones that access state coffers. And I mean, that doesn't make anyone, that's definitely not good for anyone, and it doesn't make anyone comfortable in particular.
Particularly in a country where we have such a high unemployment of youth, we need any kind of investment that you can get in the country. And as you rightfully say, perceptions of corruption as low as ours, perception scores as low as ours, chase away investors. And in that way, the president recently has started an initiative to hire as much as you can. You need foreign investment for that kind of initiative to get a boost. And with this sort of things happening, you are really not helping the country, which is the point that you are making about perceptions of corruption, particularly in the higher echelons of business and politics in our country.
So, I mean, and let's talk about that, because you said that we're only 64th out of 176 countries, and that means that we're still in the upper band. We're in the top 50% at the very minimum, right? We're not at the bottom of the worst, but, we're so somewhere in the middle. How does South Africa then rank comparatively? I mean, is that a reasonable measure to people internationally and, globally look at that and say that, yeah, well, there is some corruption in this country. We need to acknowledge that, and they can do a little more to fix it up. But it's not as if, you have to bribe your way all the way through from the guy at the border all the way through to the president. They are doing something about it, and therefore there is some safety and some comfort in being able to invest and work with these people. I mean, what does that rating mean? Where do people place us?
Yeah, look, we are not in the worst possible place, as you explained. Mm. But an ideal score for us as a developing country would be a score of 5, which is, between highly clean and highly corrupt. And I'm saying this because we are being measured against developed countries who do not have the same problem we have of foreign investment due to policies and all other sorts of stuff which the current president is trying to sort. So really for us, we should have a score that goes above, so even 7. Because I said, a developing country will not be judged the same as a developed country when it comes to foreign investment. So while we might not be in the worst possible position in terms of where we are above many other countries that are more corrupt than us, we should be mindful of the fact that as a developing country and with a lot of mistrust by foreign businessmen in South Africa in the last few years, we should really be aiming for a score above 6 so that we can attract the kind of investment that will help the initiatives such as youth employment that are currently policy of government.
Because I presume, Pak Cohen, what the problem is in that particular instance is that you have, not a double-barrel shotgun, but, sort of a multi-pronged shotgun that sort of is turned against the nation. In our instance, there's obviously investor confidence because you're concerned with stability issues. And I'm not saying that the land debate is a bad thing, but the debate on land would be something that would have some people nervous. That's already sort of an issue against you. You have this issue with, and then there's all kinds of other things that come into play. I mean, we have a very high crime rate. Economic conditions aren't looking all too great. So the last thing that we need is to have an increased and high perception of corruption slowing down economic growth.
Absolutely. You've made a very important point, one that the IRR has been making as well, particularly on mining and agriculture. Kashwal, I'll tell you why. Because with issues of land, as you say, it has got nothing to do with the study that I'm doing now. But if you remember very well, if you've been following stories, you will know that even in land reform initiatives, there have been incidences of corruption. I'll give you the latest example of the Estina dairy farm in the Free State.
Yeah.
And there's also been money not going to intended beneficiaries. So those kind of things, even where government might have policies that are trying to advance the population at large, you find that there are still corrupt activities even within that. We can even go to mining and talk about the issuing of licenses and so on, and the issue with the Gupta Gate as well in terms of mining and stuff. So those kind of things exacerbate the problem, as well as you rightfully point out. So we do not need that kind of this kind of problem of corruption above the issues that we have with the policy uncertainty, the leadership that we've had. And you can even see the reaction. And because this study ends only in 2006, it might not be surprising to expect that in the future, say maybe 2018, South Africa might have a better score because of the initiative that the current government...
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean...
Yes.
Less of a question that you asked to an analyst, more of a question that you asked to a fortune teller. I mean, what do you anticipate in the future? Do you see a turnaround? Because I think, mood-wise, there is some reticence to an extent because it's still the same governing party. A lot of people will point out, well, Mr. Ramaphosa, you were a comrade of former President Jacob Zuma all along. You were his serving deputy president, and you didn't seem to be so vocal up until the time that you actually went ahead and put your threw your hat in the ring for the campaign. But the fact of the matter remains that there's still a higher level of optimism around what the future of this country holds now than what it used to hold in the not too distant past. So, do you see that people are? Do you expect that there would be an uptick and that we would be doing a little better, especially based on the fact there's a clampdown? We see Parliament is extremely active and all kinds of other interesting things happening.
Yeah, there are two things. Given the kind of people who are polled for this index, it's resident and non-resident businessmen, which are people who will be moving in the same circles as the ratings agencies. So if they view the current president favorably, and as it, as you can see with the downgrading, the avoidance of the downgrade and stuff, those are the kind of people who will be called to say, what do you think of South Africa? Mm. And if they have, no matter what the objective facts are, but as I said, this is the perception of very influential people. If they have a favorable view of the president, you might expect, as an educated guest, to have our score moving up from where it is now.
100%. But I mean, apart from that, because I'm also just concerned, and this is the final issue that I want to address with you there, Cohen. I mean, we have seen in the not-too-distant past South Africans and the populace and an entire political party and all kinds of other people, you know, placing their faith in this one political panacea. And, you know, it might seem like a distant memory now, but 9 years ago, that political panacea, or 10 years ago, that political panacea happened to be former President Jacob Zuma. And that has changed significantly since. So even though President Cyril Ramaphosa is doing all kinds of wonderful things and shaking up the you know, the corruption narrative, and I'm not suggesting he will become corrupt, but, you know, things could change and we could see us slipping back into that particular situation. The key question then becomes, you know, what other solutions are there in place that we can use to monitor, you know, us ourselves, to ensure that we make sure that we keep ourselves safe from this type of thing?
Well, look, we've always cautioned people as the IRR to say that, you know, no one individual can really rescue South Africa from the problems that it has. What we track instead, and which is a more accurate indicator of where the leadership would be going, would be the policies. Are the policies the right ones to attract investment? For instance, let's stick with land reform for now, because it's the most topical issue. Will it be done in a way that will not chase away investors, that is recklessly? But as I said, if the leadership has promised that they'll do it in such a way that it doesn't impact investment and food security and those kind of things, they'll basically look at whether these things will be implemented as the leadership is saying, and then they can take it from there. But everyone is right to stay cautious about a change of leadership being a panacea to South Africa's ills, as you say. But we track policies, and if the policies are going in the direction, removal of corrupt people from offices and boards of very important SOEs, a step in the right direction. You will look at the reduction of the size of government, which is something that has been promised as well to the population of South Africa. You look at those kind of things, and whether, you know, issues in our important industries, sectors such as agriculture and mining, you look at policies in that direction, and then you'll have a sense of where the country is going. And I agree with you that we should be cautious about just looking at one person or changing leadership.
No, I think you're making tons of sense there, Cohen, and hopefully, you know, we remain vigilant and we start guarding, you know, the narrative that surrounds South Africa, and that we're not seen as, you know, a bunch of crackpots that are busy, you know, with corruption, and that corruption becomes sort of a synonym for South Africa. Because unfortunately, I do think, at least locally, that's the view that we have. Maybe as a final question before I let you go, where do you think, whose perception is worse? Our very own internal perception of ourselves, or the external the perception that the international community has of corruption in South Africa? Because you know what I mean. I mean, many South Africans would tell you that Nigeria is by its nature an excessively corrupt nation. You know, that India is, you know, a corrupt nation. You know, and so forth and so on. So is that view worse on the outside, or is it worse from within as South Africans?
Without talking up South Africa's standing in the national committee, you'll remember that even at the height of the Gupta Jet scandals, we had multinational companies such as BMW still investing in the country and opening plants and so on.
Yeah.
So there are signs that we might go the way of Nigeria, as you say, but there is still significant confidence in South Africa's infrastructure to say this can be turned around if the right people are placed in the right position. So, South Africans, whether it comes to crime or corruption, we have been worse on ourselves than other people from outside. So
okay.
I would say that the perceptions are worse internally than they are externally.
100%, mate. Listen, let's leave it at that. All the best to you. And have a good Easter weekend, eh?
Same to you, sir.
Thanks, man. That was Cohen Lebone. He's a crime analyst at the South African Institute of Race Relations. As you heard there, of course, we have a particular perception internally of our own levels of corruption. But I think that the key thing is that, well, frankly, the only way that we're going to deal with this or improve it is if we fix it ourselves. Full stop.